The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
I'd like to thank NASS and this opportunity to bring together four of the experts in our section on multidisciplinary approaches to the spine. I'm Tom Terramani. I'm a vascular surgeon in San Diego, California, and I'm going to pass it to Jonathan to introduce himself.
My name's John Sheff. I practice in Denver, Colorado. I have the good fortune of working very closely with Dr. Brent Kimball, who's here with us today, as well in doing most of his spine exposures from an anterior approach.
And I'm Dr. Brian Kuhn. I'm a vascular surgeon in Cincinnati, Ohio, performing anterior lateral lumbar spine exposure for many orthopedic and neurosurgeons in Cincinnati.
I'm Dr. Brent Kimball. I am a neurosurgeon in Denver, Colorado, and I perform the gamut of spine and have a commitment to anterior lumbar approaches. I get to work with great vascular and approach surgeons like the three here, and I'm happy to be a part of this panel to bring a little bit of the spine surgeon perspective to the conversation.
So our discussion today is going to revolve around anterior spine surgery and the complications of vascular injury, vascular thrombosis, and we're going to look at it from different perspectives. So from a spine surgeon's perspective, how does the complication of vascular injuries influence your use of anterior spine surgery in your practice?
I mean, for me, thankfully, our complication rate is obscenely low, but as with all surgery, it's the heavy consideration for selecting an anterior approach every single time. There are, of course, some surgeries like lumbar disc replacement right now that's the only approach. And so I'm considering it every single case. Is this an appropriate case? What are the risk factors? How could this go wrong? I'm thinking about that all the time.
How does that interaction work with you and Dr. Sheff in deciding? Do you guys discuss cases? How does that play out?
So it's evolved, and at times we've had to have more conversation about it, but he's taught me a lot about, and working closely with him, I've adopted a lot of the things that he's looking at. So I don't want to ignore those things, but there's this internal conversation that's always happening. And a lot of it happens as I'm looking at body habitus. I mean, I would just break it down. The conversation that we typically have, in my mind, I simplify it down to, BMI of the patient, prior surgical risk factors or radiation, things like that, level of the confluence rather than the level of the surgery, just where the confluence is, and I'm always looking at the morphology of the vessels, and can't always tell everything from that, but using an MRI scan primarily because that's what is always available to just understand and try to play the surgery out and the manipulation of the vessels before even selecting that approach.
So you're kind of saying you're using imaging, all the information you have, to kind of have your plan A, plan B when you go into an operating.
Yeah, it's even before just selecting the surgery, but yeah, so hey, if we were going to do an anterior approach, how would this work? Would this be safe? Let me look at the films, let me go through this. As you know, transitional vascular anatomy is, it's always transitional almost, and it seems like transitional spine means you got transitional vascular, and we seem to operate on a lot of people with transitional vascular or spinal anatomy just as a consequence of spinal pathology.
Yeah, and I would say to that point, I mean, in the context of spine surgery, we all know what transitional spinal anatomy is. But I think for us doing exposures, we also recognize that there's high variability in the relative relationships between the aorta, the vena cava, and the spine. Mm-hmm. I think what I've learned from our relationship as it's grown is at the end of the day, we're here to facilitate a high quality spine outcome. So everything in my mind has to be derived from spinal relationships and the relative relationships to spine and vascular surgery. We talk about, level of the aortic bifurcation, where did the renals come off? We're focused on vascular first and everything else secondary. to, I think, do high quality spine exposure, safe spine exposure, it requires you to shift your frame of reference. Now everything's contingent on bifurcation relative to the spine, to the disc levels, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I know we've spent a lot of time, and like you said, that relationship has evolved over time to, I think, really both of us hone in on a sort of a common purpose, common ground, and then everything works back. But it's all about, for better or for worse, it's all about the spine.
Well, yeah, the preoperative planning, the communication that you guys have, and the communication with spine surgeons is, from our standpoint, from a vascular surgeon, what are the goals that you're trying to accomplish with the spine surgery? And then me as an access surgeon, what are the safest ways to accomplish that, you know, to get to that spine? Mm-hmm. And there is a tremendous amount of venous anomalies in the retroperitoneum and the pelvis that the preoperative preparation and planning gets you ready for that surgery. How to anticipate that? What moves are you going to make, which makes it an efficient surgery, a safe surgery, or maybe a surgery you decide maybe there is a better approach for this. Mm-hmm. But that's where the teamwork, dynamics, and communication to me is tremendous and is huge.
That's a great point. Yesterday, Dr. David Pauly did a presentation at one of the symposiums, and they showed a complication rate vascular-wise relationship to anterior spine surgery that ranged from 2% to up to 15%. Brian, in your practice, is that an acceptable number? Do you think that's a realistic number on a spine access practice that is relatively high volume and doing the operation in a higher level?
In a high volume center, no. I think that is too high. I think those are some historical numbers that, you know, some of the modern techniques that we use to expose the lumbar spine, you're gonna see those numbers continue to fall and to drop. What is the question for a lot of these studies that Dr. Pauly was talking about is what is considered a major vascular injury? First, we have to define that. And we may all have different definitions of what that entails. But for me, it should be 1% or less as having a major vascular injury during a lumbar spine exposure. I don't know, what do you guys
think? Jonathan, what do you think? 1%?
I totally agree. I think within that 1%, the vast majority are likely to be venous injuries. I think we talk a lot about, and our patients always ask, what about the aorta? What if you nick the aorta? Things of that nature. But I think the reality of spine exposure is what you're really contending with in every case is venous anatomy, complexities, nuances of venous anatomy. That's not to minimize the role of the arterial anatomy, but this came up in conversation too, but that's where I believe so strongly in pulse oximetry. So you're continuously monitoring perfusion. Brendan and I do this every case, and we've gotten very accustomed to managing expectations with retraction. Sometimes you have to limit your exposure a little bit if you're completely occluding the iliacs, but the trade-off is we're not having arterial thromboses, we're not having dissections. So I think arterial complications should be negligible. Venous complications, I think 1% is an excellent target. And I think what we see day in, day out is that requires a tremendous amount of experience, gestalt, and the understanding of that anatomy and what it will or won't tolerate. And go back to the piece that Brent and I really hone in on is at a minimum, I wanna know where those vessels are preoperatively. I wanna have a plan of attack. Does that mean I'm married to that plan? No. I mean, we always have to be flexible, but I want a very clear understanding of what we're up against before we cut skin.
Well, Brent, I think from your perspective, having the opportunity to work with someone with high volume, high quality, has that impacted you in how often you use anterior spine surgery in the management of spine disease? Because you're seeing low complication rate and not these issues of vascular injury.
I mean, I would say absolutely. 1% seems totally reasonable. It's hard to do anything in spine or surgery at all without any complication. And I think 1% is acceptable. I would say I feel like our complication rate's gotta be even lower than that from a major vascular injury. I don't, that's venous injury for me that is not repairable or that is not salvageable or we're able to manage intraoperatively, it just totally unacceptable. I would never go into surgery without knowing and feeling, you know, very, very confident that we're gonna not have a major injury. And so, but we're big boys and this is surgery and we know that things happen, and so we can't hedge every single risk, but I feel really comfortable with it, and it doesn't limit what we're doing. But I will tell you that I'm always psyched, you know, either voluntarily or involuntarily screening out candidates based on size of their belly or other risk factors. I mean, all those things, I feel like limiting complications in vascular access and anterior approach comes down to a few very, very simple things. You don't have to overthink it. The depth of the incision is huge. The patient comorbidities is a big deal. The age of the patient, the level of interest, the level of the bifurcation, is there perivascular fat? Do you have a good window? I feel like it doesn't take a lot to limit the complications there. Just be thinking about them and understanding this is a bad patient for this approach. I always worry about, from a vascular standpoint, from the approach surgeon standpoint, you're being handed these cases and you're seeing risk and you're always only seeing the risk. And so I feel like the spine surgeon has the opportunity to put the approach surgeon in a really bad position if they're not thinking about it. It's irresponsible for us to be doing that. And I hope that John's not feeling that for me. I never want to put him in a position where he's like, I got to say no to this.
Well, I think that's an extremely important relationship between the access surgeon and the spine surgeon that develops with time. But on that point of your job of kind of picking patients preoperatively what are good risk, I have a question for Brian. So now the patient's on the operating room table. How often do you find yourself in a situation where you look down on the IVC or the aorta or the iliacs and you say, I can't do this? Like, we hear people aborting cases 10, 15% of the time. In my practice, that's almost 0% of the time.
I agree with you. It's certainly less than 1% of the time that you would really look, that I've looked at that and aborted a level.
For me, I'll tell you this, two things. One, if I'm finding myself in the operating room doing the exposure, and that's the point in the care cycle that I'm saying, oh wow, maybe we can't do this. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to have made quite certain of is that I've already had that conversation with the patient and the spine surgeon. Again, that's what I'm wanting to pick up, those nuances in the pre-op setting. So there are cases where I have to look a patient in the eye and say, listen, I don't know if we can get this done. That's why we have a plan B, C, D, and Brent and I will really cover that. But the other piece is looking a patient in the eye and saying, but if you trust me and I can exercise my best professional judgment, I'm going to do everything possible to get there. Lo and behold, we get there. And I think the other comment I would make is, and for spine surgeons, you know, viewing this, I believe that if you're partnering with a person that's bailing routinely or says, I can't get you 4 or 5 or something, that's something that needs to be critically evaluated and hopefully through education improved upon. But I consider, next to major vascular injury, aborting a level or aborting a case as the next most severe major complication. Because let's face it, Brent, you indicate your patient, they have a relationship with you, much more so than us, and they show up for spine surgery. To go into the operating room, go to sleep, get a big whack on your belly, wake up, and not have had spine surgery is unacceptable. It's not a high five moment. Wow, we got out of Dodge. No, you did something egregiously wrong in that process to land yourself at a point where you say, I can't expose. We talk about failure to expose a level or aborting the case, major complication.
I think that's something in the literature that you don't see talked about. And I think you hit it right on the head that from a spine surgeon's perspective and his patient, an access surgeon not being able to accomplish what they want to accomplish is a major issue.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just switch over and complete this with, we have a vascular injury. Brian, what goes through your mind and how you manage it? I think there's a lot of nuances in our training to pull out the proline stitch, proximal distal control, and do all those steps that I think is very different in spine exposure.
No, I couldn't agree more. That you said that's the philosophy of vascular training: proximal distal control, repair with proline suture, which is counterintuitive to kind of what we do in spine access, and the opposite, honestly. To me, the question is for vascular injuries: is that what? First, I want to know, when did this occur? You know, what part of the surgery did this happen at? And so, is it during my exposure and access? That is extremely, extremely uncommon. The more injuries that I, you know, involved in is when it's during the arthrodesis, the discectomy. You know, that's when less than 1% of these injuries still happen. So, when I encounter that, you know, how bad is the bleeding? Can I control it and tamponade it with some kind of retractor, some kind of hemostatic agent, and we could still proceed with the surgery while we're not losing blood? That's my preferential way of treating it, is to allow them to complete their portion of the spine surgery, and then address the bleeding that's encountered. A lot of times there are many topical agents that we all use, you know, not on a daily basis, but we have in our back pocket, or we have on that table ready. There's, you know, things like Everest, Tacoseal that we use, mm-hmm. to try to control these venous injuries when they do encounter. And only rarely does that fail and we pull out 4-0 proline RB1 needle, you know, 3-0 proline SH needle.
I think that's a very good point, and I think that's where a lot of approach surgeons early in their career get into trouble. They get this feeling, bleeding, I need to fix it. And particularly when most of these injuries happen is that stage where the spine surgeon's doing his work, that really throws the operation now in a situation where you're going to potentially abort this case. Mm-hmm. So Jonathan, mm-hmm. anything to add in regards to how you handle that situation of bleeding in that scenario?
Well, I totally agree with Brian. I think the algorithm, if you will, it begins with where you are temporally in the case. But my algorithm, first 10, 20, 30 steps is hemostatic, 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 putting a topical down, and actually counterintuitively avoiding definitive repair till after, you know, I want to get the spine surgeon through the spine part of the procedure. Again, I'm there to facilitate high quality spine surgery. And so if you're doing this and you're having regular injuries, you're grabbing the proline, a lot of these times it may be a pinhole that you go put a stitch in. I mean, we've all learned this, right? And then next thing you know, the stitch pulls out. Now it's a bigger hole, and you go down this rabbit hole till you're talking about ligating a major named vessel, right? And it happens real time right in front of you. So the first thing I think you do in these injuries is really you ask the question, can I achieve direct hemostasis and temporize this? That's the break point. If not, well, I mean, honestly, I think those injuries come along quite rarely, like a transection. More commonly, you can manage it with a topical handheld, get creative to complete the spine operation, and then I'm going to come back, I'm going to assess the injury, and I'm going to do something definitive. Still probably going to be topical, but something definitive. Once you put a stitch in, though, like you said, you have to think long and harder, then you're going to turn around and retract on that stitch and tear it worse. Probably a bad idea.
I think one of the things that you'll find as approach surgery and interacting with your approach surgeon, you'll see him put that hemostatic agent, put the retractor on, complete the spine, release the retractor, and there's no more bleeding.
Right.
And I think that's probably over 95% of the time what happens in that scenario. Brent, any issues that you can add?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to listen to what you're thinking and how you're talking about timing of the vascular injury, because for me, if I, as the spine surgeon, am the one causing the vascular injury, that is totally unacceptable. Like, it should never happen. And I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, but to me, it seems like there's a lack of communication. There's a lack of understanding from the spine surgeon when they come into the room. They don't understand what's happened to get where you just got us, right? How much retraction is really happening? How tight that vessel really is? It's not like, oh, great, thank you for this lovely window. I'll see you in 20 minutes. Right. That's not cool. That's not acceptable. And it's high risk. I honestly feel like if the surgeon that's, you can't separate the two pieces. If the individual that's performing the arthrodesis or arthroplasty isn't bought into what it took to get there, then they're going to be like, give me a little bit more. You're like, there's no more left. That's it, right? So for me, when I hear about major vascular injury, I'm not thinking about during the spine surgery. I'm thinking about getting there. I'm thinking about placing the retractors. Is that when it's happening? That's my mind. And it doesn't happen very often, but most of that is from pre-op planning. You can't plan around a spine surgeon sticking a rasp through the iliac vein. You couldn't plan out. You couldn't avoid that. And I think, you know, I'm not saying there's sloppiness out there, but I think things happen like that when the person that's performing that part of the surgery isn't fully understanding how much tension is there.
That's a huge point. I agree 100%. And that's what I do in my practice, is what it sounds like you guys are doing, is that there's tremendous teamwork, communication. When my spine surgeon comes into the operating room and I show him that window, I explain to him, this is the anatomy where we're at. This is where the danger is. This is where the tension is. Yeah. Under this blade is where this vein is living. Mm-hmm. If anything is, you see anything coming up from underneath this,
it will pop out.
Is coming up underneath this blade, this is the left common iliac vein. This is where your danger is going to be. And I think having that communication, that orientation of the anatomy where the pitfalls, the dangers lie, you know, it may be sound like it's intuitive, but maybe it's not. And it doesn't sound like it is throughout the entire country. And I think that's where we have some room for improvement and teamwork here.
I think on that note, as we're going to complete this session, I think an important thing for a spine surgeon, if he doesn't routinely scrub with his approach surgeon, is to scrub and stay in the room when the approach surgeon is doing the operation.
Absolutely.
You don't have to do this every case, but do it to the point where you really understand what that surgeon is doing.
The idea that you can start with a new surgeon and say, hey, listen, I've never operated with you before. I'll be back in 30 minutes or whatever. That's ridiculous. It's irresponsible. You know, the spine surgeons sign the patient up for the surgery. They've committed them to all of this. And then they're going to bring another surgeon in and not be there for any of that and not understand. I think that's just irresponsible for the spine surgeon to do that. And so, especially if you're working with a new approach relationship, you got to put something into it. Otherwise, you legitimately are responsible for all the risk. You can't just shove it onto somebody else because they're the vascular guy or they're the approach surgeon. That's inappropriate.
Well, this was a great discussion. Thank you all for participating, and thanks, NASS, for allowing us this opportunity.